This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We turn to the big election in the New World in these next weeks, and an election that will very much tell us the direction of all of Latin America, given the results of earlier elections, center-left, such as in the recent election in Bogota, Colombia. This is Lula da Silva, the former president, pitting against President Bolsonaro, the present president. And there are many issues to do with the pandemic and with trade and with lawlessness. However, we turn to the big story that has dominated conversation about Brazil and other states for years, the Amazon forest. This is a neotropical forest, I've learned from a paleobiologist. This forest was created after the death of the dinosaurs. In other words, this is a product, as we mammals are, of that day 66 million years ago when an asteroid or comet crashed into what is now the Yucatan. And the question of the Amazon always turns on, it is the breathing mechanism of planet Earth, and it is under attack from what is called deforestation. Professor, you've dealt with this for years. I'm fresh to many of these statistics, thanks to the Washington Post's lengthy investigation. What I see is that deforestation is a plague upon the Amazon for many years. But recently, it looks like the trend is picking up again after it declined for the early part of this century, down to the low point looked to be about 2010, 2011. The deforestation is presented as a calculation by criminal activity. You can make more being a criminal in the Amazon than you risk being fined in the Amazon. And the question is, what is to be done? I understand that all these governments can be blamed for it, but it looks like no major difference has been made these last years. Is it on the rise because of law enforcement missing, because of an intention by Brazil to take advantage of the natural resources in the forest so it can be swept aside to get at, say, extraction in the mines, or, say, to let cattle graze because there's a market for the meat around the world? What is driving this rise again in deforestation?
Well, John, you yourself pointed to a number of the different causes, and it's really a combination of all of those, not just one. And I should also point out that when we talk about the Amazon, only about 60% of the Amazon, which is a lot, but still not all of it, is in Brazil. So in other places like Peru, for example, in Bolivia, you have important parts of that greater Amazon Valley, whose stewardship by those countries is also an issue, but often gets overlooked. Specifically in Brazil, as in those other countries, you have, on the one hand, really any number of different commercial viable uses for the Amazon that people want versus the imperative to protect it or not use it because of its biodiversity and because of its larger benefits to the planet, something that caused the Amazon and its protection to be actually enshrined in Brazil's 1988 constitution. But so on the one hand, you have people who are displaced from other areas that are looking for just a place where they can eke out a living. And of course, if you want to have farmland, then in order to have that farmland, you need, land and not just trees. You have other cases where it's, the cutting down actually to take the timber out. You have other situations where it's the desire to clear the land because you need it cleared to mine for gold and other things, generally illegally that's under that territory. In part, the construction of infrastructure creates access, to it. In part, criminal groups, as you point out, coming into the area, oftentimes for other activities, creates incentives for them to engage in this, for the purposes of illegal mining. And the way in which the Amazon is cut down, oftentimes there are interdependencies. And so, sometimes it will be, frankly, just burned down because they want access for the mining. Sometimes, there will be illicit logging activities, that's permitted through bribery or other things. But at the end of the day, that combination has accelerated. There was an organization that was created shortly after the Brazil enshrined the protection of the Amazon in their constitution back in 1989 called IBAMA. But the problem is that in about the middle of the Lula administration, from about 2011, 2012, 2015, you started seeing IBAMA being hollowed out, turning from doing a lot of citations, a lot of expensive fines, a relatively large force that actually had begun to reduce deforestation to the point where there just weren't enough inspectors and capabilities. There weren't enough people in the law enforcement system to process the violation. And so as IBAMA and other enforcement mechanisms were hollowed out, not just under Bolsonaro, but under Lula and Dilma, those left-of-center PT governments as well, deforestation started rising again. So again, the driver is the illegal activity. The driver is just that the commercial value of that land for things like soy production or individual farming. But the part of the vehicle is just the insufficiency of those enforcement mechanisms. Even though it looks on the books like they're protecting the forest, but they just don't have the people and the capability to stop those who are doing things illegally. Or if they stop them, lack of sufficient fines or credible punishment to make people think that it's not worth it to take the risk and just keep cutting or destroying trees.
Yes, the Washington Post features an exchange between an enforcer, an inspector in a very large area, 3,600 square miles, one person and his team, confronting a farmer who had illegally deforested 45 acres and he had a fine. But all the time in the exchange, he said, what about those guys over there? And he would point to 125 acres that were deforested. And he said, they planted grass. Nothing happened to them. They went on. They kept their money. So what we have here is a perception that the government is either not fair-minded or just too weak to drive this point. And I presume that many of these individuals who are fined are not gangs coming in from outside to exploit the terrain, but are people living there who want a better life. Is that true, Professor?
Well, it's a good point, John, that you have a mixture of who is actually there in the Amazon. I mean, you certainly do have criminal organizations and they have, armed people who, protect that territory in what they're doing and have a significant, footprint. But you also have people who are really just trying to eke out a living on their small territory. And they just feel like we're in the middle of this vast area and who's going to stop me? And everybody, cuts or burns what they need to have enough to eke out a living on this land. So it's a combination of a lot of different people, some wealthier and better protected and more criminally connected than others. But it's all part of an economy. But the perverse incentive that you also pointed out is that when you have this lack of inspectors and some groups who are well armed and well financed, at the end of the day, the limited enforcement that they can do ends up getting concentrated on the little guy. And why is that? I mean, number one, because these inspection teams, you mentioned, one team, with armed escort, but still, one team to cover, 3,600 square kilometers of land. And so, generally, you may not go into the areas where you have a large criminal group doing a major threat. Number two, move and find one of those big actors. Oftentimes what happens is that, it takes a long time for the case to go through. It's a complex case. At the end of the day, they'll file an appeal, which will essentially prevent them from getting any fine until things run out. So if you look at the people that they actually are able to inspect, it's typically the smaller cases. And the people in the end of the day who end up paying the fines are, again, the little people who, don't have the money to, to get the lawyers and to, stretch out the case until the statute of limitations runs out.
Touching on the story of the election, which has the Amazon as one of its policy issues, the perception that the Bolsonaro government is not protecting the Amazon, and the presumption that Lula da Silva, his new government, will protect the Amazon. The election had an initial debate, and I believe there are several more debates. And the polls have not changed profoundly. There is a headline saying Bolsonaro narrows Lula's lead ahead of Brazil election. The question I have, Professor, is in the first debate, Mr. Bolsonaro came right out and called Lula da Silva an ex-convict, pointing to his conviction and jailing for that vast conspiracy bribery campaign that was transnational, something to do with a car wash, very elaborate. And Lula da Silva was released from jail on what is said to be a technicality. But I take from these pollings, everybody knows it, and that's not the determination they're voting on.
No, absolutely, John. And first of all, although there has been, movement of maybe one percentage point in the polls, Lula is still way, way, way ahead, about 8 or 9 percentage points at this point. It's still Lula's race to lose. And Bolsonaro's negatives are still way higher than those of Lula, who remember with some nostalgia, Lula and things like the cash transfer program Bolsa Familia, how Lula was able to have a relatively successful government at a time when oil prices were high, and it was a time of plenty for Brazil from 2003, and really the PT government that followed with Dilma Rousseff. Having said that, part of the collective memory in Brazil is the level of corruption that certainly existed under Lula, the sense that under the PT, government and corruption just got worse and more out of control. And the symbolic thing that you mentioned with that was the car wash scandal, in which Brazil's big construction company, Odebrecht, it turned out, was very involved in a scheme of payoffs and in bribery for many different projects, not only in Brazil, but elsewhere. And so Lula was seen as involved in a little piece of that, which was the receipt of benefits from, I believe it was an apartment or condo that was basically, use was basically gifted to him. But the broader issue wasn't just that particular conviction, which ultimately was overturned because Sergio Moro, the prosecutor judge in the case, was found to have used improper techniques. And so really, he was let out and rehabilitated to compete for the presidency on a technicality. So in that sense, he was not seen as being cleared of charges. But there's also the broad sense of Brazilians that Lula was part of that corruption. And again, we were just talking about the environmental protection organization, Obama, here. And again, that kind of the corruption within Obama in its effectiveness was part of that kind of broader sense of corruption that people remember existed under Lula alongside the prosperity. And so if there are certain, one of the things that sticks that Bolsonaro says about Lula is tying him to corruption and criminality. And it's not just the conviction, but that really taps into Brazil's kind of sense of remembering that sense of PT and government corruption during that era, which frankly still exists. It just exists in a different name. And so, Lula and Bolsonaro both have things to appeal to their own base and appeal to the high negatives that those who oppose their opponents have against them. And for Lula, that tie to this broader corruption and the car wash scandal is certainly one of his weaker points.
Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College, The New World Report, Return to Violence in Peru. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.